World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. We're available to you by way of your radio station. You can also listen to a live stream of our show every night at our website, philhendryshow.com. You can get a backstage pass and also watch our backstage video cast of the show. If you have TuneIn, go to the Phil Hendry channel on TuneIn and hear our show live every night at 7 o'clock Pacific on TuneIn. So grateful that you're with us. Bud Dickman, Margaret Gray, Robert Leonard, General Galen Shaw. General, good to see you tonight.
Yes, thank you.
We knew that you were going to be perhaps not here, correct?
Well, that is true because I was in Atlanta. As soon as we got off the air, I flew immediately. I was going to fly to Atlanta, but I flew to Chattanooga.
Where's that?
Well, that's in Tennessee.
You flew to Chattanooga last night?
Yes, in the middle of the night. And they said we couldn't get into Atlanta. And I said, well, then what do I do? They said, well, you can drive. But then we turned on the television.
And you saw the whole gridlock in Atlanta, right?
We did. And I said, that's a fool's errand. I said, you're not going to get me into the courtesy van. And they said, the courtesy van is right outside. And I said, I will not get into a courtesy van. And they said, well, we'd really appreciate it if you would. They began to move me that way, you know.
Were they grabbing your arm?
Yes, they took me by the elbow.
Wait, what was this for?
Well, I was giving a talk, or I was going to say a speech. It was not so much a speech, but I gave a talk, or I was going to give a talk, at Lemley College, which is in downtown Atlanta. And I said, well, the courtesy van, and they said, there's the courtesy van.
What about the courtesy van?
Bud, would you shut up and let the general finish?
Hold on, Bud. And I said, I'm not getting in that courtesy van. They said, well, the courtesy van's waiting.
What is this conversation you're having with them?
What is this about? They say the courtesy van is there.
Well, I felt as if I was being muscled. I felt as if I was being strong-armed into the courtesy van by the Lemley College people. And that's when I said, don't take another step. Back up. Get away from me. And I said, I'm waiting here. I'm going to take the next flight back because we were connecting through Dallas. I said, I'm taking the next flight back to Dallas.
So you didn't get in the courtesy van?
No, I did not get in the courtesy van.
What courtesy van? What is that about, the courtesy van?
What do you mean, what's it about, the courtesy van? I don't know that it's about anything.
Well, Phil, it's the courtesy van that they... Was this the transportation to the school?
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, but I mean, in other words, otherwise you'd have to pay to go down to this school that you're giving a talk to, right?
Well, I think that ordinarily this was a van from the airport.
Oh, I get it. Okay, it was a courtesy van from the airport that they were taking all the way to Atlanta.
Yes, they were not going, they were going to take the courtesy van. And I said, I'm not getting into the courtesy van.
Yeah, you already said that.
Hold on for a minute.
I'll do it. Bud, shut up.
I don't like being interrupted by you, Bud. I think you're a fine young man, but I've got on my mind right now the way I was treated in that Chattanooga airport. And then they said something to me I'll never forget. They said, if you want to spend the night, we can put you in the Holiday Inn in downtown Chattanooga where the Chattanooga Choo Choo is. And they said that you could go and enjoy that. And I said, what am I supposed to enjoy?
Yes, what does that mean?
Well, and I said that. And they said, well, you can have breakfast and then go see the choo-choo. And I said, I've got your choo-choo swinging.
You said that, huh?
Yes, I did. And I sat back down in the airport and I said, I'm waiting for the next flight back.
So you did a big fat turnaround last night. I got no idea. And you're here? God bless you, General, for that.
No, I'm going to shake your hand, General.
Well, that's all right.
Let me shake your hand, General. It's fantastic that you would show up here for the show after that entire imbroglio that you went through.
I cannot believe. So they were going to put you in that. It's a good thing you didn't get in that van.
Well, that's it, because I saw the, the television news.
Well, what I saw on the news, I've never seen before in my life, and I just want people to know something. If you've listened to me for any length of time, you've probably heard me tell the tale in the past, that I have some familiarity with the city of Atlanta and snow. I have some familiarity with the city of Atlanta and snowstorms and ice and traffic jams, as a matter of fact, because I was there in the winter of 92, 93, on my way to Minneapolis when the snow jam, as they called it then, today they're calling it the, what is it, Margaret?
They're calling it the snowpocalypse.
Man, that snowpocalypse, everything is apocalypse, you know. Well, get it, Carmageddon.
Yeah, why don't they call it Snowmageddon or something?
Snowmageddon, that sounds jacked up.
Well, I don't think Snowmageddon works.
You mean jacked up? I think it does.
No, Snowpocalypse works better.
Well, Snowmageddon would be Snowmangeddon.
Yeah, Snowmangeddon would be a more snowman Armageddon.
Yeah, it'd be a snowman Armageddon.
You spent snowman.
It's not a snowman. I know it ain't a snowman. It's a snowman Armageddon. Anyway, we don't have to worry about snowman Armageddons because we're not talking about that. We're talking about the snowpocalypse, which is what they're having in Atlanta.
Well, what was your situation there?
Well, wait a minute. Before we get into my thing, I want to know, you flew all the way to Chattanooga, Tennessee, connecting through Dallas. This was last night after the show.
Yes. Got a red eye to Dallas, then I was able to pick up a connector, and I got into Chattanooga at around, I'd say 5:30, the local time in Chattanooga.
Okay.
And it was then that they said, we'll wait for the connector to Atlanta. And
why didn't you didn't fly into Atlanta?
No, I didn't fly into Atlanta because of the snowpocalypse.
You didn't fly into Atlanta because of the snowpocalypse, but you decided to fly into Chattanooga instead.
Yes.
And you still have to take a van to drive into Atlanta.
Well, were you worried about the airport?
I didn't know what the conditions on the ground would be in Atlanta.
Well, were you given any information? I mean, were they flying? You know, of all the places that they could keep open, I would imagine an airport would be the one.
No, I flew into Chattanooga, and that's all there is to that. And there ain't no more, and that's what I did. And then they said, get into the courtesy van, and I said, that's where I draw the line. I sat down.
Maybe draw the line. You know, something wrong with it?
I don't get into courtesy vans that someone is taking my elbow and leading me to.
Well, I understand that.
Why?
Well, it's a little threatening.
Yes. Why? There's something Soylent Green about it. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
You mean something Soylent Green. I won't question your decision in general. It was a good decision. So then you turn around and come back to L.A. What time did you get here?
Well, I got back to Los Angeles about 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Have you had any sleep at all?
Yes, I slept on the airplane. I slept like a baby.
Well, I got to tell you, that's a hell of a turnaround. And so there you have General Galen Shaw doesn't even get into Atlanta, gets into Chattanooga, is going to drive to Atlanta, but then he decides he doesn't want to drive to Atlanta because you're seeing the news with all the automobile problems and the traffic jams and things like that.
Well, that is correct, yes. And by the way, I didn't fly into Atlanta either because I felt that it was not safe given the conditions on the ground as you would describe them when you were in the snow jam.
Well, I don't think that the airport would be unsafe to fly into. You know, they take extra special care of the airport. And Hartsfield is a fantastic airport, and they have every kind of safety equipment and every kind of runway clearing device, and the heating of runways, I think they do now, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, aircraft have de-icing features, and so you're pretty well secure just landing an aircraft. The problem in Atlanta happened with the traffic around the city. We get back here from our break. I'll tell you a little bit more because I was actually involved in, I'm not involved in, but I saw with great bemusement, I saw exactly what went down in that city when the snow hit there in 93. It's weird, man. It's Atlanta, I love you. You're a beautiful city, great people, but man, you cats are, what is wrong with you when it comes to snow? You don't get it? But you understand what you know what salt is, right? And snow plows and things. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And from the San Gabriel Valley Tea Party Coalition, we're going to have Charlie LaFountain with us here in another 15 minutes, but getting to the city of Atlanta and what has happened in that city with the snow, I mean, it's really weird, man. Honest to God, and I'm wondering exactly what has happened here since the last really bad weather situation in Atlanta that affected the traffic, you know.
Well, you're talking about 1993. A lot of people don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. 1993, in the winter of 93, specifically in the month of March, or April, actually, there was a snowstorm that struck Atlanta and struck with fair ferocity, not ferocity, but it was cold and it was enough of a snowstorm to cover the city, to ice over rather quickly. And a little bit more snow fell, and then that iced over. And you know how, if you're familiar with snow, you know, if it melts and you don't get off the street and it's melted, and then it ices again, you've got this very, very dangerous situation with powder on top of ice that's on top of ice. And that's what happened in Atlanta. And so there we sat. And when the snow first fell, you're thinking, well, you know, isn't this pretty? But you begin to get the sense that nobody knows what they're doing, because there's now traffic jams. And there are people having a difficult time getting around. My car was actually at a mechanic's. I was getting it worked on because I was on my way to another city that is equally, or was equally colder, probably colder, was at Minneapolis. Anyway, the snow falls. And as the days progress, the snow, and I say days, I mean 2, 3, 4, 5 days, went on into the weekend. I finally split on a Sunday to go to the Twin Cities. And the damn snow did not get plowed. The ice on the streets was not treated in any way with salt. In other words, nothing happened. The city of Atlanta just sat there on their ass watching this quasi-disaster occur. Now, nothing like what has happened in the last few days in Atlanta happened then. But they could have taken a look at what they were going through then and realized that, man, if we, for whatever reason, if this happened in a work day or during a particularly well-traveled time of the year, man, we're going to have some problems. And sure enough, I'm looking at Atlanta again. This is a repeat of what went down in that city in 93. No snow plows, no nothing.
Well, so you're saying, in other words, they didn't learn anything.
Well, it's difficult to imagine, but no, they didn't. Nobody in that city said, wow, maybe we ought to invest in some equipment.
Well, that's very expensive equipment, isn't it? It's probably money that's well spent.
Yeah, but what do you mean expensive? If they need it, they got to have it.
Thank you, Bud. Very good point. If they need it, they got to have it.
Oh, thank you, Bud. What I'm saying, Bud, is how often does it snow in Atlanta?
Doesn't make any difference how often it snows. We know now that when it snows in Atlanta, you might as well declare a disaster, because that city, for whatever reason, can't handle it. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to deal with it. I've never seen a city that, not once, but twice in my experience, and maybe even more, has had snow fall, and they're like, I'll never forget when my kids were very, very small. My stepkids were small. They didn't know what a manual can opener was, you know.
Yeah, Miss Vanner, you gotta give a story again.
Yeah, exactly. When you start doing these stories, Phil, can we? I feel like getting up and getting a tuna sandwich, which I bought some. Does anyone want a tuna? Because I made some.
Oh, I'd love a tuna fish sandwich. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like one.
Okay, are you done?
Do you want a tuna fish sandwich?
No, I don't. I'm on the air. I'm talking.
Yes, but that's why I'm going to get the tuna fish.
Because it's boring. You can stay here, Margaret.
Oh, my God, you're holding me against my will.
Margaret, I think it's only right, you know,
holding you against your will.
I'm kidding.
All right, so now I forgot what I was going to say.
Do you want a tuna fish sandwich?
No, I don't want a tuna fish sandwich. Hold on for a minute. I was what?
Manual can opener.
Manual can opener. Yes, thank you, Nikki. The manual can opener. The manual can opener was something my kids were not familiar with. So I walked down, and the electronic can opener was, I know what it was. The microwave was broken. That's it. Yes, the microwave.
Oh, this story is getting, it's so coherent. It's so much fun.
Hold on. So the microwave was broken. The kids didn't know anything about boiling water. They knew nothing about how to make breakfast. So they were walking around in a circle with these bowls of oatmeal, just the oatmeal, the dry oatmeal, and the milk in it. But they didn't know what to do with it. It's literally walking in circles. Because they were unfamiliar with unfamiliar with how to actually heat something up in a pan on the stove. So, Atlanta reminds me of that. What are you guys looking at?
Well, that story sort of fell flat, didn't it?
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe it fell flat, but the point is, they're like a city of people there, or at least the people that administer that city, they're like, walking in circles, man, like they don't know the modern technology. There's a snowplow.
Well, there's got to be a reason for this, Phil. I'd like to talk to someone that's familiar with the area. I know that Pastor Rennick has done a lot of work down there and is originally from Jacksonville, isn't he?
Yeah, he's from Jacksonville. I don't know his familiarity with the city of Atlanta, but we can talk with him. But I mean,
I call him up.
You can call him up, see if he's there. But I mean, the larger point that I'm making here, and I don't think that we need to, I don't think we have to hire consultants. And we don't have to hire people that are, you know, that need to go out and do focus groups. I think the larger issue is simply this. That city, and I know from my own experience, has not learned a damn thing since the last time they had a snowstorm. And when I looked at that aerial shot of that town with all of those cars, and then someone said, I said, what is that? And somebody said, that's Atlanta. I said, you got to be kidding me, man. That's impossible. That's impossible. I said, what? I said, the last time the snow fell in Atlanta that I was there looked like that. You're kidding, right?
Well, what are they supposed to do, Phil, when it's a particularly bad snowfall?
It wasn't a particularly bad snowfall. You got to plow out, for starters. The second thing you do is get some cops out there. I don't know what these guys... You got the state patrol, you got... And here's the thing with Georgia, and maybe it's the same in some other states. They've got all these little counties. They got 85 billion counties. They got more damn counties than they got towns. Here's a county, there's a county, a little county. And all these cops got to coordinate what's going on. You got a Cobb County, and you got a Monroe County, and you have this county, and Fulton County, and that county, and all these county cops have got to get together with the city cops, and then they got to get together with the Georgia Heat, and they all got to get together and figure out what they're doing, you know, with the thing. Pastor William Rennick with us from Bellflower. Pastor, you're from the Southeast. You're not from Atlanta, but you are from Jacksonville. Have you seen anything like this before in Atlanta?
I've not seen nothing like this before in Atlanta, Phil, but I certainly in talking to you, I understand that went through this. But what I have seen is the city administrators in Atlanta and in other cities reacting, I think, in a sluggish way to some of these emergencies. Now, I was the first one to point out to Hosea Williams, who I love Hosea Williams. I love Hosea Williams. I want you to know I love Hosea Williams. But I was the first one to point out that if Hosea Williams had toilet paper that he stole, my understanding took toilet paper from a hotel, that the Georgia State Patrol should pull over Hosea Williams wherever he is and check in the truck and get that toilet paper out of there.
What are you talking about?
Yes.
I'm talking about, what do you mean what am I talking about? You know about Hosea Williams, right?
I know who Hosea Williams is, yeah.
Well, he ripped off toilet paper. That's what they said. I didn't believe it. I said, well, when you see him, you got to get what they call a B-O-L, be on the lookout, a bowl. You know what a bowl is?
Yeah, you mean a B-O-W-L?
No, I didn't say a bowl. I said a B-O-L. You know what a bowl is?
Be on the lookout.
All right, you know what a bolo is?
Be on the lookout.
Be on the lookout for occupants. Okay, a bolo. You know what a bolo tie is?
Oh, come on.
It's something you wear around your neck. The string tie. Huh? Come on, give it up, will you?
That was pretty good, Reverend.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
look, I don't want to... I got 2 minutes, so the point is...
The point is that I've said to the Atlanta authorities, all you've got to do is look for Hosea Williams. He got the toilet paper in the trunk of his car. Well, that took these stumble bums at least 48 hours to track down Hosea. He's on his way back from at the airport in his car. He had the toilet paper in there. We didn't steal that toilet paper. The toilet paper was already in the car. And I was able to cool that whole thing out for him. But the Atlanta police didn't do nothing.
So the Atlanta police did not act in getting the toilet paper back from Reverend Williams?
That is correct, yes.
All right.
You give me that, because that long pause. I know you're all rolling your eyeballs there in the studio, and you're all saying to each other silently, Pastor Rennick has got, he's flipped his lid again. But let me tell you something. That's an example, not that the Atlanta PD or Fulton County or the Georgia State Patrol, that they're not interested in doing a job. They just get confused. You know.
Well, you're saying that they're not very good cops, then.
I didn't say that at all.
Yes, you. If you're saying they're getting confused, you're saying that you're not saying they're purposefully incompetent or bad men, but they're not very well organized. I'm not saying the individual cop, you know.
Well, what are you saying, Sid? I'm not saying. What are you saying?
I'm saying the way they organize, the way they administer, and the way that they plan these tactical, whatever tactical needs they have and operational needs that they have as police, they don't do it very well. That's all.
I'm talking about a guy with toilet paper. Man, I don't get it.
I don't get why you brought up toilet paper. I got to take a break. Thank you very much.
He's talking about, don't you remember the story Jose Williams had the toilet paper?
No, I don't remember the story. I'm talking about something else.
Well, Phil, don't get all irritated with me.
Phil, just take it easy. You know, it's it'll be a long show.
Yeah, you got that right. All right, coming up, we're going to be talking Tea Party with our good friend Charlie LaFountain here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Tea Party and President Obama and what they think is the executive, the imperial, the regal, you know, the whole thing kind of presidency, man. We will discuss that with our good friend Charlie LaFountain coming up, world-famous Phil Hendry show.
You're telling me about that, right?
So hungry.
Forget it. We're off the air now.
Well, I think it's fine.
Well, I don't know. All right. Yeah. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. PhilHendryShow.com until the 10 o'clock hour on the El Pacifico and the 1 a.m. hour on the East Coast.
Look at you looking at yourself. Oh, God.
Well, I am. I'm sort of checking out the camera, not because I think I'm hot-looking, but because I'm just making sure that we are...
Yeah, you're looking at how you think you're bitching.
Are you looking at yourself, Phil, and getting hot? That's weird.
No, I'm not. I'm looking to make sure that I'm centered here, that I... Should I move the chair one way or the other? Anyway, if you have a backstage pass, you can watch our video cast of the show. And not only is it just my ugly mug... But we also have marvelous features, such as a presentational feature, such as showing our internet, our news sources. Right now I have it on the Atlanta story, and so our people who do have their backstage pass can read along with us when we're doing certain stories. Road to Nowhere, minor snowstorm brings Atlanta to a standstill. But right now we're going to bring on with us a very good man here, Charlie LaFountain, who's been with us before talking about political issues. Charlie is a decided... Tea Party advocate, and he's going to talk with us here not only about the president's speech, but also, Charlie, I take it you're going to be discussing with us the commentary following the president's speech on this whole imperial presidency thing.
Well, Phil, first of all, thank you for having me on your program. We're very excited to be here. And this is a concern. Those of us, whether you want to call me a Tea Party person, or I'd like to think we're just concerned Americans about a president that seems to think that he is the most powerful man since the Mikado of Japan, the Emperor of Japan.
Isn't this a little ridiculous, Mr. LaFountain? This is Margaret Gray. Isn't this a little ridiculous comparing the president to the Japanese emperor?
No, I don't think it is at all. When you look at it in the specifics, the president has decided that he will unilaterally, without any consultation, frankly, with anyone, not even members of his own party, is going to raise the minimum wage for federal workers to $10.10. Now, some people say that this is not such a big deal. Well, I can tell you that it sets a very bad example, I think, because if the President of the United States decides that he is going to, without any consultation with anyone, unilaterally raise the minimum wage of a federal worker, I think it sends the wrong message. Because if the President of the United States unilaterally is going to raise the minimum wage to $10.10...
You think it sends a bad message?
Yes, it sends a bad message, and a reason for that.
Because if the president raises it...
All right, hold on for a minute. They're mocking you a little bit, Charlie.
I don't understand.
Well, you're repeating yourself. If the president raises it to $10.10 because unilaterally, because it sets a bad example, because of the president... You know what I'm saying?
No, I didn't understand any of that.
Well, I think you made your point. I want to ask you a question, Mr. LaFountain. The president is setting a bad example for who exactly? Because he is the president with the executive power in the executive branch.
Well, because he's setting a bad example to other presidents that are going to come in after him, and they'll say, I can do... And I know it sounds childish, but I think we live in a world where these decisions and the things that happen in a very simple way, and it's amazing how they do. If you have a president who has said, I want to do it my way, and I think in a very childish way, and decides that he's going to have this executive action, whatever the executive thing that he gets to do, which I am still... is it legal? I'm sure it is legal, but I'd like someone to tell me
to show me where it says he can do that.
This is a standard thing, Mr. LaFountain.
I'm sorry?
It's a standard thing. Every president's used his executive powers to order these. It's a decision made, if you will, by the CEO of a large entity, and the executive branch of the government is run by the President of the United States. It is a branch of the government that can be run by one person because it is the enforcement branch. So the president is the one that runs things, and he decides, at least as far as his power as the chief executive goes in that branch of the government, what these changes are, what can be done by him, what can't be done, and so forth.
Well, all right, so, but again, you're giving your opinion.
No, I'm not giving my opinion. It's just the fact of law. It's a fact of the checks and balances. We talk about checks and balances.
Well, checks and balances is that's a whole other discussion. We don't have any checks and balances. We've got far too many Democrats calling the shots, you know.
That is not checks and balances. Checks and balances are the checks and balances between the branches of the government, right?
Exactly. That's what checks and balances represent. Checks and balances represents the checks and the balances that
you can't explain it.
Yes, I can explain it, but we're so far off of the point. The point is here that the president did what he did, and you're not sure whether it's legal.
Look, Phil, I'll grant that it's legal. I'll give you that it's legal. I'd like to see where it's written down that it says that he gets to do that, but I'll grant that it is. I think it sets a bad example, and as just so you know, I'm not going in a circle like I did when I first started. It sets a bad example for other presidents, because if another president comes in, which will be another president after Obama's done, there's going to be another one, he will look to the president that was there before him, in this case it would be Obama, and he will say, I saw him do that, why can't I? You understand?
Well, that's what you mean by childish, then.
Well, it is childish, but it's also, if it was a Republican president, I would hope that he would not. I would hope that he would exercise restraint.
Well, speaking of Republican presidents, we mentioned this yesterday, and it should be repeated, that President Reagan, in his first term, used the executive decision, if you will, 217 times in the first 4 years of his eight-year presidency. 217 times. President Obama, as a matter of fact, has used it less frequently than Reagan, Clinton, or Bush II, George W., 147 times. So why all of a sudden this interest in Obama and the executive decision?
Well, you're saying some things that I would like to see this backed up, using this executive decision. And he's using the executive decision on stuff that you got to talk to the Congress about.
You're sure about that? You're not even sure that it's legal that he uses executive decision?
I'm pretty sure that it is, because I got to thinking about it after you started talking about it, and I'm thinking now I've heard of it.
Well, you've heard of it, but now all of a sudden you're someone who's an expert on it, and you're going to say what it's supposed to be used for? Why, that's absurd.
Yeah, you don't know what it's about.
I can only talk to one person at a time, and if you want me to talk to the general, I'm very happy to talk to you, General.
Well, you're saying you weren't sure whether it was legal, but now you're saying you know what it's used for. What did he use it for that you don't think was legal?
I think that he used it for the minimum wage. Is he allowed to do that?
Are you asking or are you telling us?
I'm telling you. Is he allowed to do that?
No, that's a question.
It is a question, but I'm telling the question. It's a rhetorical question. I'm saying to you, is he allowed? If I was to answer the rhetorical question, is he allowed? No. No, he's not allowed.
Yes, yes, he is allowed.
No, he's not. I would like you to show me what your source is. And let me say this, Phil, okay?
You know, I think, Charlie, representing the Tea Party Coalition of San Gabriel Valley, what's happening here is you're not representing your people very well.
Hold on for a minute. Let me tell you what's going on here, Phil, because I think you're a little bit behind the ball on this. Here's what's going on. We're going to file a lawsuit. I think you heard Michelle Bachmann say it. And say what you will about Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, God.
No, hold on. Say what you will about Michelle Bachmann. I think she is one of, and will go down in history as one of our great legislators. I really mean that.
You've got to be, you're all in a heap.
No, I'm sorry. I believe she will go down in history as one of our great legislators. I think that Michelle Bachmann has held our feet to the fire on a great many issues that needed to have the fire held on to the feet, or the feet needed to be put over the fire, and I'm glad that she did. I personally think, and I think I feel that I should say this, because of the vitriol and the poison that has been thrown at that woman, that I feel she's a very attractive woman. A woman that I find, you know, attractive.
Well, all right, so what's that got to do with anything?
Well, Ms. Gray, you're a female, and I but dare say I've heard you make comments from time to time that Michelle Bachmann is some kind of a horror story.
Well, I think she... Are you talking about physically? Michelle Bachmann is nothing special. Believe me when I tell you, I've covered all kinds of beautiful people in my day as a reporter, and Michelle Bachmann is no special delivery, I can tell you that.
Well, you may say that, but as a man, I'm speaking as a man. You're speaking as a woman.
Yes, I'm speaking, I think, as a vastly better judge of beauty than a man is in that situation. And she ain't nothing to write home about.
Well, I know a lot of guys, Ms. And I'll be very, I don't want to be, I'm going to be a gentleman about this, but I know a lot of guys that would love to, you know.
Well, make sure you're a gentleman about it.
All right, can we get off this subject? Because we need to keep covering this lawsuit that you brought up.
Well, but I just want to tell Ms. Gray, because I don't want to, I think you're getting away with something a lot of people get away with. They like to malign, and they like to malign Ms. Michelle Bachmann because she is a Tea Party advocate. And they make fun of her face and her breath. Or whatever, and they make fun of the sexual orientation of her husband, which I think is absolutely beyond the pale. That is offensive and disrespectful.
I would agree with that, and I know that we've been guilty of that. I would agree with that.
All right. So, believe me when I tell you, Michelle Bachmann is a very attractive woman, and there's a lot of guys that I know that would very much like to put the. And I'm going to be a gentleman about this because I don't think she's been treated very, very gentlemanly.
Okay, and then we have to break.
All right.
And I'd like to move on to another point, if I could.
Fine, but I want to just say that Michelle Bachmann is a woman of great allure. I think she's attractive, and there's a great many men in the United States of America and Congress and all of that would love this show.
You're not doing yourself any favors here.
Charlie, you ought to quit while you're ahead.
No, I'm not going to. I'm trying to find the right word.
Well, you didn't find the right word there.
It's a shove.
Oh, boy, that kid, the way that kid just laughed really just threw me off my game. I would love.
All right, why don't you think about it, and we'll take this break as Charlie LaFountain tries to find the right words to express how bad he'd like... How bad he'd like to have sex with Michelle Bachmann, I guess. I don't know. We'll be right back here. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Charlie LaFountain from the Tea Party Coalition of the San Gabriel Valley talking about a proposed lawsuit against the President of the United States by the Tea Party people. Hey, it's the Phil Henry Show. PhilHenryShow.com and Phil Henry Show on TuneIn. Those three places you can get our show on our website with live streaming on our website. You can also watch the video cast with a backstage pass. You can as well listen to us on your favorite radio station, or, you know, if we're on your favorite radio station or a radio station in your area, or you can go over to TuneIn and listen to us on our dedicated Phil Henry channel on TuneIn for free starting at 7 o'clock Pacific time. On Sunday on Phil TV in HD for our backstage pass members, Bud Dickman and Steve Bozell will have their award-winning, that's what it says on the website, Bud.
Yeah, it's award, but it's the Carl Hamstack.
Carl Hamstack, who is that?
Yeah. That's the guy that got the award.
Your award-winning commentary, huh? Anyway, it'll be the Carl Hamstack Trophy award-winning.
No, it's what? God, man.
No, it was not Carl Hamstack Trophy. It's the Carl Hamstack Trophy winning commentary of the Bud Dickman, Steve Bozell Super Bowl commentary.
Well, that sounds even more imbecilic than what this one said.
I beg your pardon.
Never mind. It's the award-winning commentary of Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman this coming Sunday, starting at 3:30. Watch the game. Follow along along with Bud and Steve as they give you their thoughts, their feelings. You guys doing a Puppy Bowl at all?
No.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
How are you going to do the Puppy Bowl?
Do commentary on it.
What? Yeah, right. That'd be the dumbest thing that has ever been done, to do that.
You could do commentary on the Puppy Bowl, man.
Yeah, why are you doing commentary on something, man? Do it on the Puppy Bowl. That's something you can handle.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you do the Puppy Bowl commentary? That's something you'd handle.
No. I could do the Super Bowl commentary. You two nitwits, do the Puppy Bowl.
No, we're doing... Is he allowed to say that to me?
Yeah, he is. I think it's pretty funny. Robert wants to do the Super Bowl while you and Steve handle the Puppy Bowl.
Well, I think that's a little disrespectful.
I'm going to tell Mr. Bozell.
Go ahead and tell Mr. Bozell. I don't care. What's the worst that can happen? His wife makes him stay home and he won't be able to do the game?
Yeah.
No.
So that doesn't matter, huh?
Yes, of course it does. I'm just giving you a hard time. Take it easy, bud. Wow, man.
What happened to you, bud? You used to have a sense of humor.
Not about the Super Bowl, and we're very sincere about it.
Well, good, man. We're looking forward to your commentary. Coming up on Sunday, 3:30, Phil TV in HD, the award-winning Carl Hamstack Trophy-winning, whatever the hell, Super Bowl commentary. Charlie DeFountain joining us here from the Tea Party Coalition of San Gabriel Valley. Now, Charlie, I saw Michelle Bachmann reference this. I don't know exactly what it means. It sounds scary because it sounds like you guys don't know what you're doing. You're going to sue the president.
Phil, we don't know what we're doing. Michelle Bachmann, who is one of our leaders in this very active coalition of people who want America to remain a strong and a traditional power and all of that, the Tea Party people. Now, Michelle Bachmann says that we should sue the president for being the imperial president. He's using all of these executive decisions, and he's running around like a crazy man going, I'm doing this, I'm going to do that, and I'm not talking to nobody about it.
You know, your use of the English language is a little, It's a little dumb, you know.
My what?
You're going and he don't know nothing about it.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
All right, let's not nitpick how a gentleman communicates himself, all right?
Well, I mean, the cat's out of the bag now. You sound like some guy that's whitewashing a fence down south. In a minute, that guy named...
Don't use the N-word, General. We had to dump that.
Oh, I apologize.
Wow, you people there, you really love your Mark Twain to a fault. Whitewashing a fence. So I sound like some hillbilly, huh? Like I'm scratching my rear end waiting for some dumbass to come along. Maybe a Joe. And
you can't use that word either.
Oh, my. Twice now the N-word on your show.
It's been dumped. Even though you guys are quoting a book, don't do it.
Didn't know I was quoting a book. It's just the term that I heard. Joe.
Okay. I'm hanging up if I hear it one more time.
I apologize.
Wow. You know something, Mr. Henry never gives anybody a second chance with that word, so you're really getting the best here tonight.
My apologies, but again, the Michelle Bachmann, he's going around this president with executive decision, executive action, and Michelle Bachmann says that we ought to sue, and I'm with her. You know, I admire this woman greatly, Phil, and the idea that there is anything untoward, I think, in the way that a great many Republican men admire her is simply, I think, disgusting and disrespectful to her, as well as it's disrespectful to me. It's disrespectful to her children. It's disrespectful to my children. It's disrespectful to her husband. Disrespectful to my husband. I'm not my husband.
Your husband?
I mean my wife. And it's just disrespectful.
Right, so it's disrespectful.
That's right. Okay, so I said it too many times, but the...
No, you are repeating yourself an awful lot.
The thing that I want to mention is that she is a remarkable woman, and I, if I wasn't married, yes, of course. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to put their hands all in...
You know, Charlie, you're not fooling anyone. You sound like a degenerate pig the way you're talking about her.
Well, which side of the street are we working now, Ms. Gray? First, you don't like her, but you do like her.
You're talking about her as a woman. I will defend her. As a politician, there isn't a human being in the world that is dumber than her. But as a woman, I defend her.
All right, well, as a woman, I defend her. I'm saying that I think she's... I like her politically because I want to I don't want to do anything. I'm very, very much wanting to do it, but I'm not going to do it.
What?
That's none of your business. Wow.
Dude, you don't want to say what it is because it's dirty.
No, it's not dirty. It's just none of... Look.
Can we get off of Michelle Bachmann and your attraction to her? Because it's just getting... The more you try to make it right, it's wrong. You understand?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, but...
So you're going to go ahead and sue, or you're hoping the Congress will sue the president based upon Michelle Bachmann's view of the law because you just think she's all that?
Well, yeah, because what do you mean, because I think she's all that? What is that, some hop hip?
Because you think she's special.
Yeah, because I think she's a great leader.
1 minute.
She's a great leader.
And you'd like to put your hands all over it.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am, I did not say that. She's a great leader. Let's leave it at that.
All right, Charlie, thank you very much, and good luck.
Good luck to you guys. You're going to need it more.
All right, Charlie the Fountain.
That guy's...
He's real different, isn't he? He's real abstract.
Yeah, Charlie the Fountain, real abstract, real different, and we'll continue talking to good old Charlie as the days progress here on the front of President Obama's executive action, executive decision. They're using this imperial presidency thing. They don't even bother to look at the record. They don't bother to look at the statistics. It is the most unabashed harassment of a chief executive in the history of my life. You know what I mean? In other words, they're harassing this guy. Why? Because he's
from Hawaii.
World famous Phil Henry Show, let me see. Yeah, no problem, I'll take a look tomorrow. I'm guessing you just need to hit the cancel job red button and try again, okay.
What?
I'm trying to get this stinking rotten brother, I hit job cancel, man, it ain't doing anything. You know? No, that ain't getting it done, man. So I'm going on day 3 now. I can't use this printer, even though it got fixed, even though somebody came in. Oh, it's working fine for me. Well, that's great. Let me explain how life works. If it's working fine for you, then you got to make it work for me, too, because I'm the guy that's using it.
Well, what? Does it work for them?
It works for them, the cats that came in and fixed it. It ain't working for me, the guy that uses it for the show. So what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. I blew its mind. Instead of printing something letter size, I asked for something legal size. Well, hell, that just, that was like asking for the moon. And the brother printer, which we hadn't had a problem with up until that point, now the thing is locked. It won't do a damn thing. And so I asked the guys to come in, would you take a look at the printer, please? And they go, yeah, sure, Phil. They come in. Yeah, it's working fine for us. We printed a whole bunch of stuff. Well, that's great. Would you mind, before you leave, resetting the printer to those settings so that everybody can have it done that way? I'm hitting job cancel. Nope, not the case at all. So I'm going to write something here and move on with the show.
Well, Phil, the audience is waiting for the show.
They can wait another 5 seconds. Because I'm going to write here, nope, day 3, no printer. So if the goddamn thing, excuse my French, is working, then it's supposed to be working for me too, not just for the individuals that decided that they would fix it, and life is a beautiful thing.
Boy, you really get bent out of shape, don't you?
Yeah, I get bent out of shape. You crazy? All right, there's a story here that was in need of some airing, if I may use that word. I think airing is a good word. It's this guy by the name of Grimm, not the Brothers Grimm, not Grimm's Fairy Tales, not Grimm and Barrett, or whatever you want to call it. Now, this guy is Representative Grimm, and he looks like a real Grimm customer, too. And this cat apparently got upset with a reporter on Capitol Hill. And the reporter on Capitol Hill was asking him about a rather touchy situation, a rather touchy news story, to which the representative, Grimm, retorted, I'm going to throw you off this balcony. I'm going to break you in half and throw you off this balcony. Now, the whole story goes something like this.
Yeah, what happened was
Wait a minute, Bud. Who told you you could do it?
Well, I said Bud could pick up, and I'm sorry, I forgot to mention it to you.
Yeah, Margaret did.
Well, you got it. This is what I mean. Why is there no communication around here?
Phil, you looked like you were preoccupied with the printer, so we made the executive decision.
Oh, I was preoccupied with the printer, so you guys decided that Bud's going to do this story.
Well, we would have asked you had you been available, but you weren't.
This is what I mean. You guys, nobody's talking to me.
Well, you might as well let him do it.
No, I might as well let him do it.
I got it all figured out here. This guy, Michael Grimm, see, got really angry at a guy. Said he's going to throw the guy off the roof. And anyway...
He didn't say anything about throwing a guy off the roof. He said he's going to break a guy in half.
I think it was the roof.
No, I'm looking at I'll break you in half like a boy.
Well...
Doesn't that sound like break you in half?
Yeah, but he also said the roof.
He said...
Just let him do the story.
Go ahead, Bud.
All right, the guy's name is Grimm, and he got mad and when President Obama State of the Union, and he said he's going to throw the guy into the street or something. He said, I'm going to throw this place into the street. I'm Bud Dickman.
No, he didn't. What kind of report is that?
Phil, you were busy with the printer, and we did the best we could.
Why not just assume that I'm going to do the story?
You didn't look like you were in any shape to do a story. I was going to give it to Robert, and Robert said he didn't want to touch it. He wouldn't touch it with your lips. So...
Yeah, but I didn't want to go near that story.
Yeah, so I decided I'd do it.
And what did you say this guy said?
He said he'd throw this place into the street.
He said he'd throw this place into the street.
What's so funny?
Every one of you guys, ever since I quoted that movie with Jack Nicholson, man, you love that quote, don't you?
Well, it's very descriptive.
Yeah. Representative Michael Grimm of New York got very, very mad at a reporter following President Obama's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. How mad? Mad enough to physically threaten the NY1 cable news journalist Michael Scotto. Now, NY1 is New York's Channel 1. It's a New York news channel. It's really a terrific channel. It is like a 24-hour news channel for the city of New York. Why, of course, that and they apparently have got budget to send a guy all the way down to Washington, D.C. That's pretty cool.
Well, why doesn't Los Angeles have something like that or some of the other large cities?
L.A.'s got one thing called, they've got these raw feeds. They've got Channel 4 raw, they got Channel 7 raw. But the New York Channel 1 is a slick, beautiful thing. You know, it's a very well-produced cable news outlet. The Channel 4 Raw, all that crap is, I shouldn't say crap, but it looks like it's something, it's like they turned it over to the college students, say, here, take that and you can do what you want with it.
They should do it, good, not gooder. I'm hanging around him too long.
Yeah, do it gooder.
They should do it better.
Yeah, Channel 4, did you hear that? Do it better. All right, there, I just made, are you happy now?
Yeah, that's fine.
So anyway, Grimm was initially, I'll break you in half, says this guy Grimm, like a boy. Representative Grimm told Mr. Scotto after the latter asked him about a federal investigation into his campaign finances. Now, Grimm was initially unrepentant Wednesday morning. He said that he was doing Scotto a favor by agreeing to be interviewed about Mr. Obama's speech and that to ask him about the federal investigation as part of that interview was a cheap shot. And I suppose that has been expressed before. You often heard politicians and others say, you were going to ask me about this and you asked me about that. How dare you, you lowlife?
Yes, well, I think there is some validity to that. As a reporter, I will tell you that I take every opportunity to ask people about these things because I think it is important. To give an example, I was talking to Susan Waterby, who was the councilwoman of the city I won't mention, but she was under investigation for some kind of expenditure to Mexico for herself and her husband and a boyfriend. However, I asked her, could I please have the interview? I know you've redecorated your home. You're going to have a fundraiser here for, I think it was one of the presidential candidates, I don't know who. I think it wasn't Mitt Romney, he's not a liberal.
No, I should say not.
Then it wasn't Obama. It was Jerry Brown, I think it was. So she said, well, come in and do the interview with me about my home.
You gonna talk about this guy Grimm or what?
Would you shut your hole, Bud?
Be quiet, Bud, while we're talking.
Okay.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Bud, for allowing me to speak.
Well, you're going on and on and on and on and on and on and on. You know, and it's never going to end. There won't be no never end to it.
Hey, Bud, just ease back, man.
Come on, Bud. Now, don't be like a fly on a cow's ass. Sooner or later, the tail will catch up to you, swat you against that cow, and you'll be stomped into all that cow dung.
Yeah.
Thank you, General.
You're welcome.
So I said, can I have the interview? And she said, yes, come into my home. We'll interview. You'll talk to me about the interior decoration. I said, yes. And I said, now, Susan, these are lovely pillows. That's a great rug. But I do want to talk about Ensenada. And I want to talk about the date rape drug that was found in your luggage. And she got up with a huff and she goes, how dare you? And flounces off. And when I say flounce, I think the ladies know what I mean. She's giving the ass shake a little extra accentuation. What that means is, I ostensibly don't want to be asked about this, but I sort of do. So I followed her into the ladies' room. That's where she was going. And she's sitting on the toilet, reaching for toilet paper, and says to me, all right, if you want the interview, you've got it. But let's talk elsewhere after this. I said, okay.
And that worked, huh?
That worked.
Well, that was...
Miss Gray, you're saying to me that you went to interview this lady about the interior decoration of her home?
Yes.
And when you did, and then you asked about Mexico.
Yes.
She flounced off. You followed in the bathroom. She's sitting on the toilet and said, yeah, I'll do it.
Yes. So, in other words, she wanted to know, was I serious? Was I going to be talking? Did I really want to talk about this? And to test me, she had me follow her into the toilet. You know.
Yeah.
To see if I could take it.
Oh, she was testing to see if he could stand it.
Yes.
Okay,
Phil, so you don't believe it.
No, I believe you, if that's what you're saying. Yes, of course I believe you, but that's the weirdest story I've ever heard, and I don't even know if that has to do with anything that we're talking about. That's how scared I am of what you just said. All right, we'll take a break here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and be back with, we'll get back to this grim story, whether Bud's doing it, whether Margaret's doing it, or whether I'm going to do it, or whether we just get somebody else to do it. I know that standing by we do have Raj Fanin on another topic, but we'll be back in any event here on the world famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Don't forget that at philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass, you can watch a video cast of our show every night. You can listen for free online to the audio of the show, and you can also listen on TuneIn, on the Phil Henry channel on TuneIn for free. Yes, the Phil Henry Show returning here as we continue our exploration into the unknown, to the inner sanctum, to the mind meld of news and talk and you. This is the Phil Henry Show. Now,
And all of that was to buy time when you were doing what?
As I'm looking at this cheap crap printer. All right.
Would you give it up with the printer, for God's sake?
I'm giving it up with the printer. But I'm going to tell you something. 5 seconds tops. No go. So, you know, this gets back to the discussion I was having with my close personal friend Nikki earlier. You know, one of the things is there's no reason to do this show live. Absolutely no reason to do this radio show live. There's no reason to do any radio show live.
Why do you say that?
Because we don't need to do it live. What are we talking about? What do I talk about? This show is basically satire. This is a satire. And I don't have to be in here live. What the hell are they talking about, man? If anything happened, if something happened like, God forbid, America was attacked by China or Russia or the Martians or something, or if we had a volcano erupt in downtown New York or something, you think that I'm going to be the main go-to news guy? They're going to cut in with some national news service. So there's these days in the radio world, if radio really... wants to save itself, we don't even have to do a live show. We got to be in here doing this pre-tape so that I can get all this stuff worked out and not have to deal with it, because it's driving me nuts, man. It's driving me out of my mind, okay? I want to get this stuff working so that we can do a live radio show as opposed to me having to screw around with this stuff. And if you think I'm kidding, I'm not. You know, there's too many guys making too much money in the digital realm right now, myself at the very top of the list. And then you can talk about our good friend Steve Dahl and that Lycus and, of course, Howard. But we're all making livings apart from this Titanic that we're on. And if I'm being too cruel and if I'm being too harsh, and let me tell you something, man. Myself and a whole lot of people have got it coming. We've had it coming for a long time. We've wanted to make these statements for a long time when people could actually listen and actually do something about it. Now it's too late, man. So anyway, let me...
Well, thank you for bumming everybody out with your diatribe.
Yeah, Phil, you can't do that. I'm doing it. All right, bud, what?
Well, you want to go back to the grim or get...
Yeah, get back to being grim.
No, we're not talking... Yes, I want you to talk about this Representative Michael Grimm, okay?
Yeah, well, Michael Grimm said he's going to break this guy in half like a boy, and he's going to throw him off a balcony, and then he said, I doubt that I'm the first member of Congress to tell a reporter that he's going to break him in half and drop him off to the roof.
Well, he probably isn't the first member of Congress to say that.
Right, but did get R.C. Collins lined up with opinion on that, because this guy, Michael Grimm, is a former Marine Corps. He's a former of the Marine Corps.
R.C. Collins joining us from Bradley Military Academy. R.C., you have been in touch with Bud about this today?
Yes, sir, I have, and I'm very, very proud to be the commentator on it.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, I feel that Representative Grimm, even though he was in technically, should have been technically okay to be asked it, the question about technically what... Hold on for a minute. I feel that Representative Grimm, even though technically he should have been asked it about the question, I think that Representative Grimm was not treated good, because he was being asked it about it after the Obama speech, and that's what they was going to ask him about.
Yeah, so when they said that they was going to ask him about Obama, and then he asked about the campaign, the irregularity.
Well, the guy who asked him the question about a campaign irregularity was that guy named Michael Scudo, and he works for New York Channel 1.
Yeah, that's the New York Channel 1 affiliate. And so should he have asked it about it or not?
Well, I mean, there's two schools of thought on it. You can ask a guy about it, I mean, and say, you know I was going to ask you about President Obama, but I do want to ask you about another thing. Is it okay to do it? And then the guy can say, yeah, maybe it is and maybe it's not. And he didn't do that.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm thinking about, too.
Okay, R.C., question, all right?
Yes, sir.
Hold on for a minute. I just got one more. Mr. Henry wants to ask you a question.
Yes, yeah, okay, go ahead, Mr. Henry.
What?
Yeah, okay, I want to ask you, R.C., given the fact that there was this misunderstanding or the feeling by the representative that he should not have been asked this question since initially he was approached on the State of the Union, don't you think he at least has a point in objecting to this reporter?
Well, he may have a point, Mr. Henry, but as a member of the United States military, which I am technically because I'm at a military academy, and Representative Grimm, he was in the Marines and everything, so I feel I can comment on it, and I do think that I'm going to comment on it, too.
Okay, what's your comment?
Well, I mean, I think that he should have not said he's going to throw a guy into the street.
Okay, he didn't say that, but...
Well, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't say that. He said he was going to throw the guy. I think there it does matter, because one act is decidedly harsher than the other.
Well, I can't comment on that, Mr. Henry. I did hear him say, I'm going to throw this place into the street, or I'm going to throw you and this place into the street.
You heard that?
That's what I heard Bud say, that he heard it.
What'd you hear, Bud?
I heard that he said he'd throw the guy and the place into the street or off the balcony.
Phil, it's your show. You should You better get your hands on... If I were you, I'd strangle him.
Hey! Watch it, watch it.
You're screwing it up, bud.
Well, I mean, am I still on the air?
Yeah, you're on the air. All right, so the quote was he's going to throw the guy off the balcony or break him in half. The reason why I think it's important to get the quote right is because throwing this place into the street sounds rather generic. It sounds like just sort of a general fist fight is going to break out, as opposed to saying, I'm going to break you in half and throw you off the balcony. It sounds like a unilateral attempt at severely injuring someone by tossing them from a height. Okay?
I think so, Mr. Henry, but I think now you're just getting bogged down in the chicken crap, you know?
Yeah, that's what we're saying, getting bogged down in the chicken crap.
Yeah, I'm getting bogged down in the chicken crap because you guys can't get the quotes right. Okay?
Well, I still think you're getting bogged down in the chicken crap.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for your opinion, R.C. Great talking to you.
Uh-huh.
R.C. Collins from Bradley Military Academy. What was the relevance of that?
On account of he's in a military academy, and that guy, Michael Grimm, was in the Marines.
Oh, I see. So he's commenting on a fellow military guy, as if a kid in a military academy has anything in common with a Marine.
Well, but I mean the decorum.
I mean, we have General Shaw here. Can't we ask him?
Well, you could ask me, Phil, but I think it's also wise to get an external or a third-party opinion, given the fact that I'm a part of your panel.
Okay, I mean,
don't look at me. Don't look at me like I'm growing another head. Please, you understand what I say?
Yes, sir, I'm understanding you. I just mumbled it. But you do agree that the representative was out of line?
I think the representative was way out of line. I don't care if they would have asked him, do you like to wear women's underwear and parade it around in front of other guys on Super Bowl Sunday? It wouldn't matter at all. He still should not have threatened the man.
And what if they'd asked you that?
Well, then I would have, yes, I would have threatened the man with decapitation. But that's as a general and as a gentleman.
Decapitation?
Right, hold on. Phil Henry Show will be right back with more here as we talk about the interesting story involving Representative Grimm. Decapitation.
As a gentleman and an officer, that is my option. Yes, sir.
Wow. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, back right after this. Famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, and welcome back here along with Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, and General Galen Shaw. Yes, Bud?
Kind of so, hey, baby, you'll take a chance. I left my rubber in there.
Would you tell him to shut up?
What are you doing, Bud?
I've got my hand over his mouth. If you...
What are you doing, Bud?
Hold still, Bud.
Turn the music off. What do you think you're trying to pull here, anyway?
I heard what he said, Phil, and I was disgusted.
Yes, I did, too, and thank you, General, for restraining him.
All right, General, you can let him go, okay? Do you understand you're on the radio right now?
Yeah, so? You were doing it.
I don't want that on the air.
All right, and what he said, can I repeat it?
Well, then it's not much use.
Go ahead. I want people to hear this in the context that the General gives it.
He was giving a vulgar read on the rock and roll song that was being played. The vulgarity of the read is what I'm most interested in.
What did he say?
Hey, baby, won't you take a chance?
Let me do it at least. You have him doing my act. He's doing my act. At least let me do my act.
Oh, okay, Lenny Bruce. Go ahead.
I said, hey, baby, if you take a chance. Well, wait a minute. Where's the song? It goes like this. And then you can do it, right?
What are you doing, man?
Phil, he's trying to make a mockery of a very great rock and roll song, and I won't have it, I tell you. I won't have it.
What? Yeah, I won't have it.
My voice cracked, I'm so...
Yeah, okay, here. Okay, watch.
Phil, don't let him do it. The vulgarity is what I'm most concerned with.
Hey, baby, won't you take a chance?
I left my rubber in the other pants.
I've got my hand on it, Phil.
All right, turn it off. The General put his hand over your mouth because that's what I didn't want to hear. The what?
Thank you, Phil.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
Oh, I just heard him call. Will you? Take it back. Take it back, Dickman.
Did you hear what he called you, Phil?
Yeah, I did. You want to say it again, huh?
Why, you dirty... Take it back, you scum sucker.
No.
Why, the kid boy, he's tougher than I thought. All right, let him go.
You can't hurt me.
May I chase him?
Go on, go get him.
Get away from me.
All right. Boy, that was weird. That kid is weird. That kid's all kinds of weird. That kid is every flavor of weird. And you've got to get him under control, Phil, or I will.
Don't do that, General. I've got the kid under control. Don't worry about it, okay?
Woo!
What was that?
He pulled my skirt up.
All right, this is the Phil Henry Show. We are...
I want to say one thing here. First of all, before I go back, I kicked him out of the studio and I locked the door, so he's out on the street. He's smoking a cigar and thinking he's all so smart. But what I wanted to say, Phil, was I thought that was a great song from a very interesting performer named Chris Montez, and he did a song, "Back When I Was a Younger Woman, I Stripped." And I don't think I've made a secret of that, have I?
Well, I don't think you've mentioned that before on the air.
Well, then I made a mistake. I thought I did.
No, Margaret, I've not heard you say that. Robert?
No, ma'am, you didn't say anything about it.
All right, well, I'm saying it now. Back when I was a younger woman, I was a pretty popular stripper at a club in Pasadena, California, called the High Life Social Club. Now, I was there... just as soon as I got to Hollywood. So I was doing my auditions. I was doing my due diligence, going on my auditions and meeting the producers and so forth. But certainly a girl has to make a living. And I got this job, and they used to call me Jicky. And there was another guy that danced there named Bob. Actually, it was a girl, but she looked like a guy. And we did Jicky and Bob's love dance, Bottomless. Now,
okay, that's fine. What's the point?
Well, the point is I did "The More I See You, do-da-do-da-do, the more I love you." See, that was my song, you know.
And this was called Jicky and Bob's Love Dance.
Yes, it was, and I don't like the smirk on your face.
Well, you must admit, Margaret, the whole thing sounds jackassery.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Jackassery, huh?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, Margaret, I mean... it probably was a lot nicer than you're describing it. You're making it sound a little silly.
How am I making it sound?
Well, what do you mean you're dancing with a girl and her name was Bob, but she looked like a guy?
She was butch, okay?
All right, well, then say it. You know, it sounded to me like you're dancing with a hermaphrodite or something.
First of all, the incidence of hermaphrodites in nature, in life, very rare. Secondly, yes, she was.
Oh, she was?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, don't tell me you're going to suddenly grow silent, General, and start pondering that.
Well, I was... No, that's ridiculous. I'm not some kind of a freak, so don't worry about it. But I am fascinated with the...
All right, get it off this topic right now before I throw up, okay?
So the idea of me nude makes you want to throw up?
No, the idea of you dancing with a you-know-what. And I don't mean to be cruel, but can we just not talk about this, okay? So you were a stripper, you Jicky and Bob's love dance, whatever, and you sang and you danced to this song?
No, I didn't dance. What, to Let's Dance?
Yeah.
No, I danced to another Chris Montez song, "The More I See You."
Yeah, I remember that song. My mom used to like that song a lot.
"The More I See," I know that song.
Yes, it was "The More I See You," you know. And it was, I had a great, great act. Do you have that, Robert?
Yeah, I'll do about 5 seconds of it right here. Here it is, here. And
so it goes. Oh, I love it. Look, here we go. Do the more I look at it. Yeah. And it gets bit, well, I can't sing it here, but the more I look at it.
So you turn this song into a piece of pornography too, huh?
You're really judgmental, aren't you, Phil?
Yeah, that's me.
Only one for me. Do-do-do, and then I did a little dip. I did the cat crawl. I did the full layout.
What is the full layout?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Margaret. It's not.
La la. Da da dee dee.
By the way, Margaret sang in the show the other night. Margaret, I think it went over very well.
I was a hit. You might as well just tell everyone listening. I was a smash hit at Phil's One Man there in San Francisco at the Eureka Theater. And I opened with the song that I did here, which was...
I Wish You Love.
I Wish You Love. Leafy Glade, Leafy Glade.
Yeah, well, I'll never understand that, but it did go over very well with the... with the audience. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. So I think we've covered the Grimm story, right, Bud?
Yeah, covered that pretty good, even though Bud kind of carved it up, you know.
Well, Bud didn't carve anything up. The basic story, what do you mean, Bud? You mean...
I mean R.C.
Wow.
You don't even know who you are. You've lost your whole sense of yourself. Boy, that's sad.
Well, I know who I am, but... I don't want to know who you is.
Will you guys start using some proper grammar around here?
I think it's embarrassing. And when I have friends of mine listening to the show and they go, "You're on that?" And I said, "Yes, the Phil Henry Show." They cluck their tongues, shake their heads. I can almost see a tear forming.
All right, Margaret, it can't be that bad. And I don't have time to deal with an emotional problem.
Well, it is.
I don't have time to deal with it right now, okay? God, man.
Margaret, go have yourself. Go suck on a white owl.
Yeah, you'd like to watch that too, wouldn't you?
Maybe I would.
So there goes the general.
Yeah.
You know something? Everybody walking out of the studio without getting permission, it's really something, you know?
Well, general, I mean, what do you want to do? He's going to watch you do the show or watch Margaret suck on a white owl? I don't think there's any doubt what the choice is.
Talk about a cigar?
No, a white owl.
Will you shut up before I kick your... Are you talking about the cigar? No, a white owl. So this guy, Grimm, apparently with some campaign irregularities, and the problem was, and continues to be, the fact that it was this threat. Now, here it is, if I may be so bold as to play it for you on air.
I'm Beth, and I'm Michelle. Anything we purchase...
All right, so that's Representative Grimm sounding like a chick and doing a credit card commercial.
Yeah, from Inc.
And then he found himself and decided, oh, wait a minute, I'm not her. I'm actually me. I'm a former Marine, and I'm a United States congressperson. And here it went.
Staten Island Congressman Michael Grimm tonight admits he was out of line for threatening to physically attack a local reporter.
CBS News' Dick Brennan has more now on the congressman's outburst. And
look at how serious she is.
Apology today, Dick.
Yes, the about-face today, Christine. Well, Congressman Grimm was being interviewed by New York One reporter Michael Scotto after the State of the Union address, but Scotto tried to get in a question about a federal probe of Grimm's 2010
campaign.
Look
how serious these people take themselves.
Grimm apparently did not like that.
And just finally, before we let you go, since we have you here, we haven't had a chance to kind of talk about some of the...
I'm not speaking about anything that's off topic. This is only about the president.
Well, what about...
Thank you.
All right, so Congressman Michael Grimm does not want to talk about some of the allegations concerning his campaign finances. We wanted to get him on camera on that, but he, as you saw, refused to talk about that. Back to you.
But then Grimm comes back.
Why?
Let me be clear to you. You have to do that to me again. I'll throw you off.
I'll throw you off this stuff.
I just wanted to ask you.
So basically, you can't hear it, you know.
Well, listen, Phil.
You can't hear it, but basically what he said was that if you ask me that question again, I'll throw you off this balcony. And then he said, if you ask me that, and the kid said, no, it's a valid question. Why can't I ask it? He said, if you ask me that question again, I'll break you in half like a boy. So
that's the that's sort of suspect, I'll break you in half like a boy. It's very gay. It's hints of the gay culture.
Oh, knock it off. He was obviously just being a bully, you know, whether the gay culture.
Well, what about the boy?
Never mind the boy. It's what it is. It's a threat, and it was quite a crude threat indeed. I think we have to break, don't we, Nikki?
If yes, I'm not, sir.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com with other political news. We're going to go back over President Obama's speech. We have Charlie LaFountain who will join us. He was on our first hour, and he's going to come back in our second hour to sort of recap some of his thoughts and this ridiculous, in my opinion, ridiculous notion that somehow the president can be sued for using executive action or for using these executive decisions as much as he has. It's a pretty interesting concept. I don't think that, you know what, man? I don't think it's anything they're going to get away with, but we'll see. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in. You can listen to the show for free on the Phil Henry Channel at 7 Pacific. All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with me is our Vice President of Syndication, David G. Hall, who I'm sure has got something to, some riot act you want to read me. David, what's up?
Well, no, I'm not trying to read you the riot act. I just want you to know that the comments that you make are heard, and this comment that the money being invested by the big companies in conservative talk radio, I mean, I'm the guy that's got to go out there, Phil, and try to pitch your show.
I understand that. I know that.
All right. And so when I go out and try to pitch the show, and a guy says to me, I just heard Henry on the air talking about the money that Clear Channel and Cumulus throws away on conservative broadcasting.
Look, if you're involved in a situation where people are going to punish you for things I'm saying, what do you want me to do, you know?
Just don't talk about it.
Just don't talk about it. Just don't talk about the fact that those companies have invested in conservative radio that nobody listens to anymore.
What do you mean nobody listens to it anymore?
You know, the KFI bumped Rush Limbaugh off of their signal to KTLK. You want to know why? Because they're losing their ass. Their ratings are going down, even with Rush.
You realize what you've just done. You just made Rush Limbaugh a target. You realize what you've done.
Yes, I realize what I've done. And I'm not saying anything that I'm not trying to knock Rush. I'm knocking the industry. But more to the point, you know, if they want to continue to invest in radio shows that people are gradually moving away from, they can do that, man. But don't tell me that I don't have a right to talk about it, especially when, because of that, shows like mine and other people are trying to do something other than conservative talk, which is the absolute just stagnating ruin of talk radio. I'm going to go into the digital world, and I can't talk about that.
Well, I'm just saying, to the extent that I'm trying to get you placed on these radio stations, you know.
Placed on a radio station? I'm on a radio station, right? I'm not going to mention the station, but one of the stations you just placed me on, I'm surrounded by Hannity, Limbaugh, Beck. I'm surrounded by right-wing guys, okay? And I'm trying to do a humorous satire of a show. Now, what chance have I got?
Well, don't you think people would want a break from all of that?
No, apparently not. Apparently, you can't get enough conservative radio, man. A break from it? Let me tell you, man, as I've said before, it's like selling a jet ski in a building filled with Corvettes. What's the point, man? I mean, I might be a fantastic jet ski, but everybody who walks in there wants a Corvette.
Yeah, but you're a fantastic jet ski.
Great. That's great. Maybe people will take me out for a test drive, you know. Ultimately, though, the guy's going to say, hey, why don't we just put a Corvette there? It's okay. You can do whatever the hell you want to do, but the die is cast. It's a fait accompli. There's only one place that, in my opinion, left, and that is satellite radio, and I'm not even really sure that that's the answer. I think the bottom line here is talking directly to my audience, contacting my audience directly, either by way of the internet or a smartphone, delivering our audio to whatever platform that they are at. And people are not at the radio like we think they are, okay? So,
well, I just heard you say something that you're gonna rip the phones out of the wall.
Yeah, I'm gonna rip the phones out of the wall because this is on-demand listening now, man. People don't even listen live anymore. And as far as the idea of people using talk radio as the last campfire or whatever that bullcrap was they used to sell.
They used to say that talk radio was the last neighborhood.
Oh, isn't that nice? Well, it ain't anymore, man, because people are using Facebook. There's the last neighborhood, Facebook. And Twitter. Okay, so when I talk about my very good friend Mark Maron doing a podcast that makes a lot of money, he's on the front page of the New York Times, he's got himself a TV show, that cat ain't live. You understand what I'm saying? He's not doing a live show. He's doing a pre-recorded podcast. And he's more successful than any radio show I can think of, with the exception maybe of those, the real big guns like Rush.
But what kind of money do you think that guy's making?
Put together the TV show that he's doing, the advertising that he does not have to split up with salesmen, the advertising that he doesn't have to split up with a radio station or a broadcast group, that all that money goes directly to him. I think he's probably making a pretty good piece of change. We already know what Adam Carolla's making. Adam's making close to $1 million a year. There isn't one guy in there's the rank and file in radio now doesn't make any kind of money like that. Maybe a handful of guys make money like that. And there's Adam making close to a million with a podcast. Do I have to be, how long do I got to talk to you about this before you wake up?
Bill, I'm a radio guy through and through, okay? I'm a radio guy through and through, and as long as I can reach over and turn the knob, well, I'm...
You talking about radio?
I wasn't talking about radio there, but what I mean, as long as I can reach over...
Thank you very much.
What was he saying?
He wanted to get into reaching over and grabbing a knob.
Yeah, good God, man.
Never mind. All right. Thank you very much, David G. Hall. That's fantastic. Man.
Are you? Yeah, who is this man, Carolla?
Adam Carolla is a guy that the radio brains at CBS, because they're so geniuses over there, you know, they're so smart. He's a guy that got fired by CBS. When Howard left and went over to Sirius, CBS had a big hole in morning drive, and they didn't know what to do. Oh, what shall we do? For a while, they had Adam on, and they had David Lee Roth in New York, I think, and they let both of those guys go because they're brain surgeons at CBS when it comes to radio, not. So what happened was Adam starts doing this podcast, and the next thing you know, the guy's pulling down some very serious advertising money, and you've got he's more successful financially with the podcast than he ever was on the radio show. And what is radio's response? These morons pretend like it never happened. They pretend like, well, no, we made the right choice, we made the right move, see? So, you know, what they're saying is we gave up all this money. We just went ahead and shooed all this money out the door, and we made the right decision, and we're doing just so fantastic. I think the idea of radio for a big company like CBS, the idea of radio is it's a bother. It's they don't understand it, they don't want to do it, they can't figure it out. They know there's some money there, but you know what? Why bother? We've got television. And it irritates them because there's not one of them there that's got brains, the brains of a decapitated fly to figure out how to actually program a radio show. So they just, or program a station for that matter. So they just pretend like it's not important. That's one way you do it. Or the other way, there's the Clear Channel and the Cumulus way, which is to, we're not interested in that kind of thing. We want to do conservative, right? So they put all their money into Beck and to, it doesn't matter. It's Clear Cumulus or Cumulus Channel. You can call it anything you want. They put all their money into Beck. They put all their money into Rush, into Sean, and all these right-wing guys. And whether or not they have to beg, borrow, and steal the ad money, if they have to lie their way to a profit, they're going to do it. Whether or not they have listeners, they're going to do it. They're going to get their money's worth out of those guys if they drive every listener away from the radio in the process. They will make sure they squeeze that dollar out of the advertiser.
Thinking about
well, that's not even honest.
You can live with.
Yay! If you said that in a board meeting there of either one of those companies, you'd get applause. All right, world famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com online at PhilHenryShow.com with our video casts. We also have our TuneIn show there on TuneIn. All you got to do, man, is dial us up live at 7 p.m.
Five,
and hit that four, online store too for
three,
Phil Henry stuff.
Two. And you don't know about this life.
World famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com, and welcome back here. So Kathy fixed this thing. Kathy, what happened?
I told you all you had to do is reboot it. God almighty. You see that button right there?
Don't yell, man. We're on the air right now.
I don't care. See the button there?
Kathy, we see the button. Do you have to yell?
Yes, I've got to yell. The button there means you turn it on or you turn it off. You understand that now? God damn you, hide.
Yes, Captain Bly, I understand.
Fine. You call me out of bed, I come down and look at that. That's the button you reboot the thing with. God. Yeah. The thing. And boy, would I like to get the guy.
Well, I told you he'd be pissed.
Yeah, he was pissed.
You're damn right. And another thing. Whoa, what is this?
Sorry, that's Play-Doh. I'm making something.
Play-Doh?
Will you?
God!
All right, Kathy's our engineer and our maintenance guy. Although this is the middle of the night, you know, for him. And so all we had to do was reboot it, huh?
Well, is that what they mean by reboot, when you turn it on and off?
Yes.
Well, then why don't they just say turn it on and off?
because they say reboot.
Oh, okay.
Jeez.
Wow.
I don't know. All right, so as we had in the first hour, returning with us here for just a couple of more minutes is going to be Charlie LaFountain talking about the imperial presidency of Obama and all that there stuff. And the whole trip with that is that Obama, you know, is doing these executive orders, these executive decisions, which are within the law. Presidents will often issue an executive order for thus and so within the executive branch. It is their prerogative. Now, the Congress, as it has so often during the presidency of President Obama, has decided, let's look and see whether this is legal, because they just can't take this guy. They just can't take the black man, man. You know?
Phil, I don't think that's right.
Oh, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm not even going to discuss it. The pattern is so outrageously ridiculous that this guy, this president, has been harassed from the day he became president. That this, if this ain't about race, then there's some sort of an alien virus that has taken hold in the Congress. This cat has been bugged since he came into office. Every damn thing he does, everything he says, there isn't any area where this guy has cut a break. Even after they killed Osama bin Laden, I remember that line of really dour and sour-looking jackasses from the Republican Party as they walked up in single file to the microphone, and they were, well, that was a really good thing, and congratulations. You know, it killed them, man. I mean, I'm telling you, it absolutely killed them to say anything good about the guy. They, in fact, avoided him and talked about the military as much as they could, because the Republicans so wanted it to be one of them that could say, hey, you know, we were in the administration or in power when bin Laden was taken down. But that wasn't the case. So this guy, everything he does, they think is suspect. So we'll have Charlie LaFountain back on to talk about these executive decisions, which now they are questioning the legality of, you know.
Well, you don't think that they have the right to do that?
General, the executive decision, Phil's already said that other presidents have used them.
What other presidents?
Oh, come on. Every president, every single president has used them. All right, in other news, Yahoo chief executive Marissa Mayer insists that the long-stumbling internet company has finally regained its stride, even though its revenue is stuck in reverse. The latest evidence of the challenges facing Mayer emerged on Tuesday with the release of Yahoo's fourth-quarter results. While Mayer hailed product improvements that have helped attract more traffic to Yahoo services, investors focused on a drop in revenue that underscored the difficulty the company's having competing for online advertisers. See, what's happening to Yahoo is what happens to radio stations. They've got a lot of traffic, but nobody is sticking around because it sucks. You know?
What do you mean, sucks?
I mean, they're getting more people to their site, which is probably a function of the advertising or marketing they're doing to attract interest to Yahoo. People go, people visit, and they are like, okay, that's really great. And they go back to Google and they go back to Facebook. They could care less about Yahoo. So whatever it is that Yahoo's doing, Yahoo is not doing it right. They've been out Yahooed by Google, man. Forget about Facebook. Yahoo, I suspect for a lot of people, is a news and search engine site. It's got nothing to do with social interaction. They had hoped to shift the financial tide when it lured Mayer away from a top job at Google 18 months ago.
See, you're using the French.
I'm joking.
Well, you may be joking, but that is the proper French.
Google.
Yes, I'm not saying Google, you did. But if you wanted to use, you'd say Yahoo lured Marissa Mayer away from a very high-level job at Google.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Phil, you know, your mockery will turn into the laughter of the devil as you lay on your deathbed.
Don't applaud that.
I thought I turned a beautiful phrase, though. Wouldn't you agree?
No, I wouldn't agree.
She did, Mr. Henry.
Fine. Mayer, age 38, has succeeded in creating a bigger butt. What's wrong with you?
I thought I turned a very good phrase.
Yes, you did. Okay, can we move on now?
Good.
Meyer, 38, has succeeded in creating a bigger buzz around Yahoo with her panache and a series of acquisitions aimed primarily at the mobile device market, but the signs of a sustainable turnaround remained elusive. She's repeatedly said that it may take several years for Yahoo's ad sales to surge, but on Tuesday she promised a modest acceleration in revenue growth during the second half of 2014. They ain't going to give her years. Why would they give her years?
Well, if that's what it takes.
There isn't. I don't think there's a company in media or marketing or anything that gives anybody years. Years? That's not what I would call anything that any board would want to hear when they're in the midst of a fight for their life with Google. Revenue dropped 6% in the fourth quarter, the same rate of decline experienced for 2013. Yahoo's earnings have been steadily rising under Meyer's leadership because of cost-cutting measures and lucrative investments in two Asian internet companies, China's Alibaba Group and Yahoo Japan. Both investments were made before Meyer's arrival. The income from those two investments accounted for nearly two-thirds of the company's earnings during the final 3 months. So they're making their money in Asia with the acquisition of these two companies, and cost-cutting, which basically means we fired some people. I shouldn't say that, but that generally is what it is. And, you know, if you're going to fatten up the bottom line by cost-cutting and firing people, Wall Street sees right through that. So if that's how you're... Don't you love these executives, man, where they're going to make the bottom line look good because they've been cost-cutting? Yahoo, based in Sunnyvale, California, a city that I just traveled through earlier this week on my way back from the city by the bay.
Well, that is the Silicon Valley.
Yes, that's where the dough is, man. That's where the bread is, baby. Earned $348 million, or 33 cents per share, a 28% increase from $272 million, or 23 cents a share a year earlier. So, you know, they're up that much. A 28% increase per share is pretty damn good. I mean, any company would take that, but... excluding certain one-time items, Yahoo earned 46 cents per share. That figure topped the average estimate of 39 cents a share among analysts. Revenue, however, fell 6%. After subtracting commissions paid to Yahoo's ad partners, revenue totaled $1.2 billion, in line with analysts' projections. Yahoo's 24% stake in Alibaba, whatever the hell this is called.
I see that. It's Alibaba.
Yeah. You're right, it is. Alibaba has been...
Alibaba? You mean the Arab Alibaba?
Yeah, it's Chinese.
Wow. Boy, that takes a pair, doesn't it?
Why?
Well, the Chinese are going Arab.
No, they're not going Arab, but it's... I don't think it has anything to do with that. It's been... Anyway, the Chinese company's still growing rapidly. So, what do you think about Yahoo?
Well, I don't know.
I tell you what, let's get Jeff Dowder on the line because Jeff is our media guy. And we're going to talk to Jeff about the future of Yahoo and some of these other companies that I believe may have worn out their welcome, particularly Yahoo. But let's find out what Jeff says when we come back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, online with videocast nightly. We have the live free stream on our website, and go to TuneIn for the live show every night. A special Phil Henry channel on TuneIn. It's not special, but it's the Phil Henry channel on TuneIn at 7 p.m. East Pacific time on TuneIn. The Phil Henry Show. Okay, welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. I was just queuing up a piece of videotape here for Phil TV in HD viewers. And it's of Justin Bieber, who is arriving in Toronto, surrendering to Canadian police. And I know you can't hear that on the air all that well, folks. I apologize for that. But really, this has gotten to be quite the ridiculous exercise here. We have Jeff Dowder, but do you want to...
Well, I'd like to look at this Justin Bieber story because it's very exciting. He's a degenerate, but in a very... And let me just say this, ladies and gentlemen, as a reporter in the entertainment field. Justin Bieber, there's no question, is a degenerate of the very highest order, as is his father. The two of them combined are a moral traffic accident. Even more so, I think they're a moral traffic accident with decapitations. When...
Wait, hold on.
May I finish?
Well, hold on for a minute. A moral traffic accident with decapitations.
Well, I'd like to listen to a report, if you don't mind, for God's sake.
All right.
How dare you interrupt me? Do I jump in the middle of what you're saying? Well...
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, you do.
Phil, as I was saying to my audience as well as yours, Justin Bieber is a young man who is decrepitude, the internal decrepitude of this young man, the internal rot, the moral rot, I think is really what we want to call it, of this young man and the rotting and the stinking rot of his father. It's so thorough, it's almost sexy. A woman almost feels a shiver go up her spine when she thinks of the stink coming off of Justin Bieber's soul. That's how thorough it is. I spoke with Justin's father, Jeremy.
What?
Oh, I didn't really speak to him. I thought I was going to cue a tape, and I don't have it.
Wow.
What do you mean, wow?
You were going to cue a tape, which you don't have.
No, I don't. I thought I did, but I don't.
Yeah, you cued it. You cued it good, though.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Yeah, you cued it real good. Only problem is we didn't have the tape. Why don't I pretend I'm Justin's father?
That would work, yes.
Okay. I mean, what am I supposed to say?
I'm doing an interview with him, so I'll ask you the questions.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Phil. Jeremy Bieber, Justin's father, is of a particular rank species. He is the father of this young man who himself is a moral degenerate, almost a moral retard, if you'll pardon the expression, a moral gloid, I would say. Justin Bieber himself, mentally, morally, the entire spiritual nature of the boy is something that smells in a swamp, something that's dead on the other side of a river. Jeremy Bieber, I think, is the tree that the rotten apple fell from. I spoke earlier with Jeremy Bieber. Okay, then we pretend we go to the tape. Jeremy, how old are you?
38.
No, really, Phil, you don't know how old he is, do you?
Yes, I do. I read the story.
Jeremy, how old are you?
38.
Well, say that you're older.
What are we doing here?
Never mind. Jeremy, how old are you?
38.
Oh, you're very touchy this morning, Jeremy. Are you hungover?
Yes, I am. I'm very hungover.
Oh, really? And why?
Because I was out drinking heavily with my son last night.
Do you think that's proper?
Probably it isn't in your eyes and in the eyes of moral society. Being a father, of course, of a young man who's in the public eye.
I asked a simple yes or no question.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do, do you? What do you think of it when I say about you, Mr. Bieber, that you are the essence of stank, the essence of moral stank in our times?
I think you're just a nasty old lady.
Don't call me a nasty old lady.
What?
Don't call me a nasty old lady.
I think you're just a typical reporter, jealous of my son's success and jealous of my success, too, as the father of Justin Bieber.
Really? Is that right? And what will you do if your son suddenly leaving a movie set one night, leaving a nightclub one night, leaving the soundstage of a television show one night, loses control of his fast foreign car and goes off a cliff in Malibu and plunges to his death in the rocks below?
I think that is absolutely uncalled for, Ms. Gray, to say something like that. I love my son. My God, I would be heartbroken if my son died that way.
And yet you go out and party with him. You go out and drink with him. You encourage this irresponsible behavior.
You must understand, Ms. Gray, that my son is a big name, and we have drivers. We have limousine drivers and, you know, guys like that. We have bodyguards and stuff. Those guys ought to be driving the car, not my son.
And what are they supposed to say when your drunken son grabs the wheel from the bodyguard and says, "It's my car"?
My son doesn't talk that way, Miss Gray.
Oh, does he now? Does he really? I'll bet your son grabs the wheel of that banana yellow Lamborghini. Wow.
Hey, that's a custom paint job.
Okay, I'm done. All right, so that's what I want you to do if and when I ever say that I've interviewed Jeremy Bieber. By the way, that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it's Jeremy Bieber in case people bust on us, you see? So I'll get away with it.
Margaret, I'm not going to do,
Yeah, you got to do it, Mr. Henry. You was really good on it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to do it because I, you know, just because I read the story.
Well, I think it would be fantastic, especially when Margaret says she'll call you Jeremy Bieber. People can't say that she was talking to the real Jeremy Biebler, or whatever the guy's name is.
Bieber.
Right, because she'll say she was talking to Jeremy Bieber.
Well, now that you mention it, yes.
All right, Margaret, whenever you want to do it.
Well, we'll use part of that. Did you get that, Bud?
Yeah, I got a little bit. I think maybe you want to go back. Let's re-record here.
Let me see.
I'm thinking, you'll get out of here. We're not doing that now. We'll do it when we do it. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought it was very good, Phil.
Thank you very, very much.
Jeremy, Justin Bieber surrendered to Canadian authorities. I believe it was today. We'll take a look and see what this contretemps is about. But it was quite a mob scene there in Toronto. As if Barack Obama didn't have enough problems to deal with already, his administration now is being asked to weigh in on a grave matter of Justin Bieber's bad behavior. I don't know whether you guys know this story or not, but there's a petition circulating to have the guy deported. By midday Wednesday, that's 1700 GMT. What the hell is GMT?
That's Greenwich Mean Time, so 5 hours ahead. It'd be 12 noon.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. 12 noon Eastern?
Yes, 9 a.m. our time, 17 a.m.
Yeah.
That's 17 a.m.
I mean 12 noon there in England?
No. 9 a.m. our time, 12 noon East Coast, and another 5 p.m. British.
Yes.
Okay. By midday, a petition on the White House website calling for the deportation of the Canadian-born teen had garnered 103,000 names, easily surpassing the threshold of 100,000 signatures required for a presidential consideration. We, the people of the United States, feel that we are being wrongly represented in the world of pop culture, created by a JA in Detroit on January 23rd, the day Bieber was busted in Miami Beach for impaired driving and illegal drag racing in a flashy Italian sports car. Is that the crime?
Is what the crime?
Drag racing in a flashy Italian sports car?
What? No, you can. It doesn't matter the car.
I know. I'm kidding.
Well, what? Your point is what?
First of all, my question is: do you support this?
Do I support what?
Do you support Justin Bieber getting deported?
I am not going to say that I do. I'm not going to say that I don't until I know the age of the person that created this, because if it was an old person that created this petition, I want nothing to do with it. If it was a young, hip, with it, and now young person, then yes, I do support it.
Well, that's very, very big-minded of you, Margaret. That's really keeping an eye on the audience and on your marketing profile. What about you, Bud?
Well, I think he ought to be deported because he's a punk.
And you, General?
Yes, I say deport the scum, because this scum-sucking dog is drag racing. Then he resisted arrest. Brother, if I'd been that cop and that dirty little punk resisted arrest on me, friend, have a care. I would bounce his head off the hood of that Italian sports car, drop him in the street, pick him up again, shake him to see if he's still conscious. If he was still conscious, bounce his head off the hood of the sports car some more, then open the hood, lay his head on the manifold, slam the hood shut about 6 times, pick him up, look him in the face, shake him to see if he's still conscious, drop him in the street, and take off over top of him.
Well, I guess we know what you think, huh?
God, man, that's pretty violent.
Well, General, you might kill that guy.
Ask me if I care. A dirty little punk like that resisting arrest? Why, Oh, baby.
Well, I don't know the nature of the arrest resistment, but...
Arrest resistment?
Whatever it was, but you're right. You shouldn't resist arrest, but I don't think that's a death penalty action. Not yet. All right. I think Margaret said something very interesting. Who was the one that formed this opinion? Who's the person that put this opinion online, put this petition online? Is it some dried-up old person that just doesn't like pop music and they think Justin Bieber is a dirty little Canadian that should be spanked and sent home? Or was it one of his a member of his fan base, someone that's finally had it with him, someone that's sick to their stomach of him? In essence, someone who buys all of his records. We'll find out. As we continue here in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and also coming up, of course, is our good friend Charlie DeFountain on the, executive action stuff. Phil Hendry Show. And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I just had the ding-dang, ding-darn, ding-dang, ding-dang story. Here it is. Justin Bieber is now one of Obama's problems. So, as we were saying... And on the page here, the homepage, I guess, of the Yahoo homepage of the story, there was a video of this young man, Mr. Bieber, being taken into custody in Toronto. So And we'll find out, I hope, what the return to Canada is about. Now, there's a petition online, and it is asking for the deportation of Justin Bieber. It's a petition that has been filed with the on the White House website. And according to, I believe, the law, only 100,000 signatures are required for presidential consideration. Consideration, not that the president has to do anything, but he'll look at it if you got 100,000 signatures, and they have 103,000. The petition that was started by this JA in Detroit says we would like to see the dangerous and reckless and destructive and drug-abusing Justin Bieber deported and his green card revoked. He is not only threatening the safety of our people, but he is also a terrible influence on our nation's youth. We, the people, would like to remove Justin Bieber from our society. The White House website hosts citizens' petitions on other more heady issues, such as the legalization of marijuana and a pardon for National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden. Every petition that crosses the threshold will be reviewed by the appropriate staff and receive a response, Assistant White House spokesman Matt Larick said. But State Department spokeswoman Jan Psaki cautioned that the petition program doesn't always determine a step will be taken. It's more of another opportunity for the voices of the American people to be heard. There was no comment from Bieber himself, who, according to gossip websites, was back in Los Angeles on Wednesday after a weekend beach break in Panama. Bieber, 19, is understood to be living and working in the United States under a renewable O-1 visa for entertainers rather than a green card for permanent resident status. It remains unclear whether Bieber's visa to stay in the United States would be affected by his arrest. Now out on bail, Bieber is due back in Miami for a court appearance on Valentine's Day, when he will also face charges of resisting arrest and using an expired driver's license. Police in L.A. are pursuing their own investigation into an earlier incident in which Bieber allegedly hurled eggs at a neighbor's house. That would be the L.A. County Sheriff, because I know that neighborhood, because I used to live near there.
Oh, you used to live near there. Well,
yay.
How about that?
When I say near there, I mean on the other side of the freeway, okay? So you don't think I'm living in the lap, luxury over there, okay? So there it is. On the line with us here from Temple City, California, always nice to have him with us, is Jeff Dowder. And Jeff, of course, a part-time mechanical physics professor at Caltech University. Jeff is also a frequent contributor to our radio show. I got so many things to ask you about, Jeff. A lot of times we will ask you about the legalization efforts having to do with marijuana. I wanted to bring you on originally about Yahoo.
Yeah, well, let me address the Yahoo first, Phil, and then we can get into anything else that you may want to talk about.
Well, what about, you got an opinion about Bieber?
About Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not really. He is sort of a long way away. He's a long way away. A long way, way, way. Wow, man.
God, man, you cinch it up, man.
Hey, hold on for a minute.
Let me talk to him, bud, not you.
Sorry.
He's a long way away. I'm having a hard time because I've got a medical marijuana license, and I'm saying this for people to understand. My medical marijuana license is for a head injury that I had when I flipped my Jeep over Mint Canyon about 6 years ago, and I'm pretty sure I had a concussion because I had a headache.
Did you go to the doctor?
I did. He didn't. He said I didn't, and I said, well, okay, if you say I don't, but I do, because I do have a headache, and things were kind of blurry. And he goes, well, that's because you didn't have your glasses on. I go, well, that's true, but it's also blurry. It would be blurry even if I had my glasses on, which I didn't have at that time. But anyway, I'm not going to get in a big deal about that, because that's the whole AMA, and everyone knows they're corrupt. So.
Okay, well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah, about Justin Bieber, my whole trip with Justin Bieber is the following. He is a little product of the big, excuse me, man, he's a little product of the big pop music machine that keeps churning out these little sparkling, if you'll pardon me for saying, these little sparkling turds.
You know, the big pop music butt keeps shooting these turds out, you know.
I think that, you know, I'm a pop music critic. And
excuse me, Ms. Gray, but I'm not, I didn't interrupt you.
Margaret?
Well, I'm a pop music critic, but a lover of pop music. I don't like that analogy.
Well, that's my analogy. I mean, Mr. Henry asked me about it, you know.
Why are you asking him?
I just thought as long as we were talking about the story. I mean, do you want to weigh in?
Yes, I would like to weigh in if Mr. Doubter can take it.
Yeah, I can take it. I mean, go ahead.
When you say he is a little sparkling turd that's flying out of the butt of energy, I don't want to, never mind, I don't want to talk about this. He set the table and I don't want to sit down at it.
Yeah, see, I mean, I don't really want to talk that much about it either. I just want to say that Justin Bieber is a product of a machine that, by definition, man, cannot possibly produce no good music, man, and so that's my feeling about that.
Okay, all right, so on to Yahoo. Yahoo losing revenue. Yahoo, they've had a drop, I think, in revenue, but their stock price has gone up. What's the story?
Well, as you mentioned, Phil, Yahoo made a couple of investments
Stop.
Yeah.
Start all. Yahoo made
a couple of investments in the Asian market with a search engine in China and another one in Japan with Japan, what's now called Japan Yahoo. It used to be called. It used to be called something like, I don't know, sashimi, something Japanese name. So it ain't, you know, so that's why they're gaining revenue, because those two companies are doing well. But that was before Marissa Myers even took over. So really, Yahoo, the problem with Yahoo, man, is it really isn't anything that you can't get better at Google. It's just all there is to it. That's always been Yahoo's problem. That's the... when they had a chance to take Google down, they didn't do it. They didn't have the brains to do it. They didn't have the, you know, the technology anything that's tech that starts with T-E-C-H, they didn't have.
Well, what's that mean? Anything that starts with T-E-C-H?
Be like tech bot or something.
What?
What do you mean, T-E-C-H?
I mean, anything that starts with the word, with the letter T-E-C-H, they didn't have. So, I don't know, but, and so they got their ass kicked by Google.
Google.
I'm sorry, by Google. And so that's what the problem at Yahoo is. I don't think Yahoo is going to be around in 5 years. I think they're going to be bought probably by Google. And the consolidation that, you know, we so don't want to see in a lot of areas of business is going to happen in the online business anyway. But I think it's just going to open it up for some smarter people than the people that run Yahoo.
Now, she got rid of the ad sales guy, right?
Yeah, she got rid of Enrique something or other, and she fired him, and that ain't going to do anything, man. Like, that's the problem. Yeah, okay, Marissa, there you go. Get a better advertising guy, or maybe you should do it yourself. The fact is, she's got a job there that she can't. You're not going to turn Yahoo around without some major.
Major.
Hey, shut up, man, okay?
Well, what are you trying to say here? Without a major what?
Without some major feature that they roll out that's just going to blow everybody away.
What would that be?
Well, I mean, it would have to be something pretty heavy. It would have to be something that when you log on to Yahoo, you're in instant visual or video contact with other users. I don't know if that's even possible. Some kind of a feature like that that just breaks them out of the box and sends them, you know, yards ahead of the competition in the race. But right now, Yahoo is lagging behind because they ain't got anything like that. All they do is what Google does, and they do it more boring, more confusing, not even as visually appealing, and nothing seems to be getting better for them. So, you know, even their news page, man, which has always been a mess, continues to be, even though Yahoo has had some pretty great news coups.
I was going to say, their sports coverage of the University of Miami scandal and a couple of other things has been pretty good, and they've been, I think they've broken a few stories. Weren't they relatively first up, with the exception of the local reporting on it, on that Jerry Sandusky story?
Yeah, yeah, Yahoo was there, and on that story and a couple others. So, you know, I don't know, so what? Big deal, you know. I think if you want to start there, build some kind of a new kind of news site, you could do that, but I don't know. It sucked.
All right, Jeff Dowder, thank you. Jeff Dowder on the Phil Hendry Show, and...
Well, he is, he's an interesting man, but I think there's a lot of holes in his reporting there.
Well, there may be, but, you know, Jeff is a guy that knows technology, so I'm very happy to have his opinion on that. All right, we got just a couple of minutes that we will take for our good friend Charlie the Fountain here, coming up next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Coming up on Sunday, we will have our Super Bowl commentary with Bud Dickman and with Steve Bozell. That starts at 3:30 on the Phil TV feed, 3:30 Pacific time, Phil TV, for our Super Bowl commentary. Check it out. Back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Charlie the Fountain returning here to just put a capper, I guess, for the evening. Not a capper, but I know that there are some other thoughts you may have on President Obama's executive decisions he's made, and the Tea Party, or at least Michelle Bachmann and others that want to file some kind of a legal action, a lawsuit.
Yes, Phil. You know, you asked the question in your comment. There is a querying sound. You know, it's a lawsuit, as if this is a bizarre and unnatural and otherworldly thing to do. You know, I just listened to Ms. Gray talking about Justin Bieber as if he was an infection or a piece of some kind of. Gelatinous thing that was going to eat your face off. I don't know what she was talking about.
What is he talking about?
I'm talking about what you just said about Justin Bieber. I can make Mr. Hendry sounds like he's talking the same way about me. You know?
No, I'm not.
Well, you go, oh, you're going to you file a lawsuit? You know, and it sounded like I'm some...
You should not be taking that very personally, Charlie. What we're talking about, Justin Bieber, has nothing to do with you.
No, I understand, but the way Mr. Hendry phrased his comment to me sounds like he's looking at me or he's sniffing me and turning his nose up like he just smelled something really just bad. And
no, I am... Let me tell you what I really am saying. I'm saying you don't... It's not some sort of rot. It's not some decaying, decrepit thing. But what you're doing, I do think, is really weird in light of all of the other presidents that we've had. And I really wanted you to come on the show because you have such an admiration for Michelle Obama, and you have such a firm belief that Obama is... did I say Michelle Obama? Michelle Bachmann. And you have such a firm belief that President Obama is doing everything wrong.
Well, you know, that may be, and that is the case, Phil, and that is my right, you know. And so at least give me the respect of saying, all right, well, you want to file a lawsuit, but when you give the tone of voice that you gave, I think you feed into this idea that I'm nothing more than another stinking, I'm nothing more than another filthy sock under Justin Bieber's mildewed mattress, you see?
No, I'm not saying that. That was Margaret's whole pitch.
I was talking about Justin Bieber and her and his father, Jeremy Bieber, as if the two of them were fetid and rotten and corrosive and stank-ridden jockstraps at the bottom of some high school crud bin, you know?
All right, as long as you're not talking about me.
No, she's not.
No, I was not referring to you.
All right, well, be that as it may, Michelle Brockman, I think, has every right, and I believe is dead on right, in questioning the president's executive decisions, and has said that she will file a lawsuit. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I think she is, or maybe she isn't, I don't know, but I hope she is, because I'm not one, and she's doing this with the confidence that a lawyer would have, so I've got to assume she's a lawyer. Now, her husband may be a lawyer, too, but so much has been, there's been so much a distraction on the way he walks and the way he waves, and you understand what I'm saying?
What are you talking about, the way he walks?
Because of what some people think is his effeminity?
Well, yeah, the gay, some people want to tell you he's gay. I would not go so far as to say that, but there has been a distraction around the efforts of Michelle Brockman to get this lawsuit filed, the distraction being the way her husband flounces into a room. And I say flounce with the greatest of respect, because I know both of them, and I think they're wonderful people, and I do not think that that means that he's gay. I will say that he has a certain way of going, of waving his hand over his head. I don't know. I you know, you got me. But
all right, let's get off the husband and...
Well, believe me, I'd like to get off the husband. And I want, for the record, I'd like to say I've never been on the husband. You know.
Okay, that's great. And, you know, for a couple of guys that are trying to keep this on the straight and narrow, that was a joke that wasn't needed.
Well, you know what? You take your shots. But the I thought the opening was there, and I'd go ahead and drop the line. You don't think anybody's laughing? Fine.
No, and I don't think that that's what we want to do here. All right, so the lawsuit that would be filed would say what?
Would say that the president is exceeding his authority as the president of the United States, that he only has the authority up to here, and he's going up to here. Now, again, I hope Michelle Brockman's a lawyer. I think she is, or she at least has a friend who's a lawyer. I don't think it's the husband. It may be another, could be another guy. And, you know, I don't want to get into that. I wish it was me, but I've already, you know, sort of given you that, and it hurts.
Are we talking about your broken heart here, or are we talking about something substantial?
You know, Ms. Gray, I understand you're very liberal.
My liberalism doesn't have anything to do with it. You talking about Michelle Brockman and how brokenhearted you are that she's got a boyfriend.
I didn't say that. I said if she has a guy helping her on the lawsuit because her husband is not a lawyer, then good for him. He gets to spend time with her and I don't. Okay? Am I making a big deal out of it? All I'm saying is I don't get to do it.
Why are you even bringing yourself into the conversation?
Yes. What do you have to do with it?
Because I hoped it would have been me, okay?
Well, are you upset?
What's the matter?
Nothing. I just hoped it would have been me.
What up?
Watch the P word, okay?
What?
Well, you saw that coming. That guy was ready to go at any minute, okay? I told you he was real different. I told you he was real abstract. But then neither one of you, and I'm looking at three people, neither one of you three wanted to react to it.
I'm not in the habit of necessarily taking your psychological analysis of things, General, with the greatest of respect. And I didn't know that the guy was going to lose it over the fact that Michelle Brockman didn't want to sit down and break bread with him and go over the lawsuit. I don't know. I
think that any man that's attracted to that woman should really look deep into his heart about coming out soon, very soon. Come dancing out of the closet. I think it'll do you a world of good.
Your voice cracked.
I don't care.
By the way, General, congratulations. Your voice didn't crack tonight.
No, it did not. And people tuning in right now, thinking that you just jinxed it by mentioning that, my voice will not crack. I have the fullest confidence that my voice will not crack between now and the end of the program. What's the matter?
Well, your voice isn't going to crack, but your fly's open.
God.
What are you doing?
I'm zipping my fly. You can turn around, General, because you're not wearing underwear either.
Oh, God.
I'm very sorry, Margaret.
Oh, God.
All right. We are very, very grateful that you joined us here on the Phil Henry Show this evening, and we certainly hope that you join us again next time when we convene here on TuneIn, PhilHenryShow.com, and this radio station for another adventure in the further adventures of the world of Phil.
Oh, God.
Will you knock it off, Margaret?
I don't want to be looking at his open fly.
I apologize.